7 o'clock, Psycho sees Santa's workshop, and only Lee Majors can stop them. In the night the reindeer died. Be here.
You can't show that commercial. That thing looked like the Manson Family Christmas special.
I think I'm way off base.
Yes, you're a tad off base, sir.
Frank Cross is more than the youngest network president in television history.
Call security, have them change his locks, and toss him out of the building.
Oh, he's fired? It's Christmas.
Thank you. Call accounting. Stop his bonus. Watch out.
He's a thoughtful boss.
Thanks, boys. Get the nurse.
A generous brother.
What did he give you last year?
I don't remember.
A shower curtain. Did you hear him? I think you dropped something here.
And a true humanitarian.
I can't get the antlers glued onto this little guy. We tried crazy glue.
Have you tried staples?
But his life is about to change.
Woo-wee! That was a good one.
You are going to be visited by three ghosts tomorrow at noon.
God, tomorrow's bad for me, Lou. As a matter of fact, the whole rest of the week is a washout.
Anyone who thinks he hates Christmas is wrong.
Come back to Jersey, you moron!
It's ghosts he hates.
I love that bit!
Christmas present.
Bill Murray. Karen Allen.
It sounded like you'd seen a ghost.
A ghost?
John Forsythe. Bobcat Goldthwait.
Hey! You glad to see me, or is this a shotgun in your pocket? You know this one?
Everybody knows this one. Let's go now.
Now, does everybody know this one?
Carol Kane. Robert Mitchum.
I really care!
David Johansen.
Oh, I'm having the weirdest day!
See Bill Murray get Scrooged.
Hey, back off, big man. That may work with the chicks, but not with me.
Bah humbug! It's a new episode of the Film and Water Podcast, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly. And joining me once again is our pal, Chris Cummins. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
It's great. I'm glad to have you back on. It's been too long, man. You did two shows like practically right in a row with me, and we had such a great time. And then we talked about doing Scrooged, which is the movie we'll be talking about, and then we missed it last year. Our schedules,
unfortunately,
just did not line up. And so I was like, well, we'll get together on another show. And then I noticed like another 10 months went by. And then I was like, well, why don't we just try Scrooged again? So here we are talking about Scrooged. I mean, you know, I have to say, I don't want to brag, Chris, but I give a lot. And sometimes I found myself giving too much. And I would say to myself, stop it. I don't know if you've ever experienced that.
I have actually, so it's a very difficult thing.
Yeah, it is. It's very hard
being Frank Cross.
Yeah, it is. Scrooged from 1988, of course, the Bill Murray version of A Christmas Carol. When did you first see this movie? Did you see it in the theater?
I didn't. I actually didn't see the movie in the theater. I desperately wanted to, but it was like a weird time. I didn't really know people at the time who liked going to the movies, which is a very odd thing.
Hmm.
I was obsessed with this movie from the TV trailers. I got the soundtrack for my birthday. I have a December birthday, so that year it came out, because it came out on Thanksgiving. I desperately wanted to see this movie. Rolling Stone had a magazine that had like a pull-out Scrooge poster that I had in my bedroom wall. I was a big Bill Murray fan. Desperately, desperately wanted to see this movie. Got the soundtrack from my sister for my birthday. I finally saw it when it came to video, I guess, which was about around Christmas of 1989. And it became my favorite holiday film of all time. Still is. I just think it's a perfect movie. What I like about it, I think more than anything, is it's using this trope of retelling a Christmas Carol again, which has been done so many times.
Right, can't go wrong.
But and the thing that I think is just so brilliant about this is, you know, while the ending is obviously very uplifting and everything, but it's such a dark, movie for so much of it that I still can't, you know, I really love that aspect to it about how bitter it is. And I like that, you know, it doesn't really go for sentimentality too much right away.
Oh, I agree completely. I think this movie is pretty dark. And then when it goes for sentimentality, it goes all in.
Which is what I
like about it. I like that it really kind of swings wildly from one side to the next. I mean, yeah, you're right. This is a really pretty dark movie, and that's a lot of that seems to be the thing I hear the most from people who don't like Scrooged, is that they're like, oh, it's too dark. Roger Ebert famously gave it like a 1.5 stars or something, where he was like, this is just so unpleasant. And I'm like, well, that's the reason I like it, is that to me it earns that incredibly sentimental ending, is because it has sort of taken you through this dark night, very dark night of the soul for Frank Cross throughout the whole thing. I did see this movie in the theater, and one of the thing that has been forgotten, I think, over time, because, you know, a lot of people caught it on video like you, is that when I saw this movie, it was a big deal that Bill Murray was back. Bill Murray had been gone out of movies for 4 years following Ghostbusters, which is...
That's an eternity. I mean...
It's an eternity.
For a filmmaker like him.
And is unprecedented.
You know, film star.
Yeah, really. And is unprecedented for an actor who had just scored the biggest hit of his career to then disappear for... I mean, he was in Little Shop of Horrors in 1986, but that's a cameo appearance. But I was a huge Bill Murray fan. I loved the original Saturday Night Live. Bill Murray was always my favorite person from Saturday Night Live. And I saw Stripes, and I saw, you know, I saw Tootsie with him in it, and Ghostbusters. I didn't see The Razor's Edge because that movie didn't even play. I would have seen it because he was in it. And it was like, I went from 13 years old to 17 years old in those 4 years. And that's a huge amount of time to not see your favorite film star. Scrooge was a big deal. It was just, wow, Bill Murray's making movies again. That was so exciting.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting things about this movie. The thing that really strikes me the most about Scrooge is how it's still really, really underappreciated, especially, you know, given the career evolution of Bill Murray, you know, since he started working with Wes Anderson. You know, this is a movie that gets left out of the conversation a lot about Christmas movies, about Bill Murray's filmography. It's kind of like the redheaded stepchild of Bill Murray's filmography, and it's really, I don't understand why, because it is very, very hilarious, hilariously funny to me. And I also find that, you know, the dark humor, thanks to just like a perfect script from Mitch Glazer and Michael O'Donoghue, who was known for his weird bitterness,
the great dark prince of Saturday Night Live, Michael O'Donoghue.
Yeah, and the original script, which I found online, an early version of the script, which was actually darker, kind of doubled down on a lot more of the darker stuff. And there apparently was some cuts to the finished product that, you know, they cut out some even darker stuff, which I'd love to see or learn more about. But even online, you can't find out too much about the production of this movie. Can't find out. You know, Bill Murray doesn't seem to be a big fan of it. And Richard Donner never really talks about it. So it's just this weird Christmas movie that's kind of like an orphan out there that has a very small and devoted fan base. But, like, you know, given the performances in this movie, you know, it's not just Bill Murray, but it's Karen Allen, who I know is one of your favorites.
Well, that's part of the reason I wanted to have
Lover
you on.
Is great.
Yeah, I mean, you
well,
and I...
we'll talk about that. Yeah.
As fellow members of the Karen Allen Appreciation Society, we have to go on and on about her for this movie.
Yeah, it's just this weird thing that, you know, there's all this – you always hear certain movies from the 80s that are just talked about nonstop when it comes to Christmas. It's obviously like the Holy Trinity being like A Christmas Story, Die Hard, and Gremlins. But like Scrooge is just kind of forgotten, and it's on Netflix Instant. You can watch it whenever you want. You know, they've never done a decent special edition of this movie. They've never – given it any kind of acclaim, so it's just kind of out there in the ether, and that doesn't make any sense to me, because to me, this is the holiday movie that I have to watch every year. There's no other movie other than this that is a must-viewing. It's basically this and Christmas Eve on Sesame Street are the two things I have to watch every Christmas season, otherwise it doesn't feel like Christmas, and even if it's kind of like a crappy year, you know, there's the two things that still have to get watched regardless of anything else. And this is a movie that just, you know, it was a hit, if I recall. It did well box office-wise, but it just has had no real cultural footprint to me, which is very odd because I can't think of a movie that I quote more all year round than this movie. I mean, everything like see, show me a nipple, or could you please stop the goddamn hammering? You know, like just little moments throughout the movie that I quote nonstop. And like, I'm fortunate that a lot of my friends also are big fans of this movie, so like they get it. But there have been times where I've like, you know, just been in a conversation with people and like quoted it, and they've looked at me like I had two heads, and I'll be like, yeah, it's the Bill Murray Scrooge, and I get that kind of raised eyebrow, like, oh, you like that movie? Like, yes, I love it. It's Bill Murray's finest film. And you know, like I'll say it. I like Scrooge more than I like the Ghostbusters films.
Wow.
And not to disparage them, but it's my favorite Bill Murray film of, you know, and yeah. So I'm just rattling on about praise.
Show's going to be. I mean, we're here to love on this movie. I mean, it's funny we talk about things being quotable because I myself have yelled, "Go back to Jersey, you moron!" And I live in New Jersey. You know, I mean, like, but I find that line very, very. That's pretty appropriate.
It's because it is. There's so much in it that is just so like, you know, there's been a lot of times where I'm going through Christmas lists for what I have to buy people, and I just think to myself in my head, most of these are towels. You know, it's just it's that kind of, and obviously the listeners who aren't deeply familiar with the film are probably a lot through this going to be like, what the hell are they talking about? To which I say, go see Scrooged again. It's perfect.
Most of these are towels.
Why do you think this movie hasn't really become like a perennial holiday favorite throughout the years?
You know, that is a really good question. I agree that I think that it's the fact that the studio has sort of just forgotten it. You mentioned there's no real deluxe version of this, and that was something I wanted to bring up. It was good to bring it up later, but let's talk about it now. A couple of years ago, because I own this movie on DVD, and I kept hoping that they would do a special edition. And then at one point, there was a special edition promised, and it was going to have commentary by Richard Donner, who is my favorite person, one of my favorite directors, and I love his commentary tracks. And
his commentaries are so informative.
Oh, my God, they're fantastic. And it was going to have all these special features, and I was like, okay, excellent. And then without any notice, they pulled it. Paramount pulled it, and it's never been seen of since. And so it's like, well, what happened there? Where did this thing go? Did they promise a Richard Donner commentary, and the Donner's like, what? I didn't say I was going to do that. Forget it. Like, where did this thing go? I mean, it's famous that Donner and Murray did not get along on the set. I don't think that's terribly surprising. Richard Donner has been known to get in fights with people, and Bill Murray has been known to get in fights with people. So you put them together. I think that is part of the reason that Paramount doesn't, you know, they don't treat this movie the way they treat like The Godfather. Not that I'm going to compare the two, but like, you know, Paramount makes sure that The Godfather gets a re-release every couple of years. They put it out on the big screen again. Like it's a film that they know they can continually make money from. And so they're reminding people that it exists. Scrooge just kind of got put out there, and you're right, it was a success. It made like $60 million at the time, which back then was not bad. And it's like a movie that only cultists like us have to, you know, speak up for. And if you do, you go online and you look up lists of great Christmas movies, Scrooged will show up occasionally or sometimes even often.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's weird is that the people that own it and the people that are in it don't refer to it very much. It's very strange. Yeah, I don't know why. Because I said, I think this is a great movie. I think it's a wonderful movie. I think it's got an amazing cast, people all playing at the top of their game. How many movies are you going to have that's got scenes with Bill Murray and Robert Mitchum, for Pete's sake?
Right.
Robert Mitchum at his goofiest best. When he talks about the thing with cats, you know, we're going to do programming for cats. There's one scene where Bill Murray's like, I don't have those numbers of how many cats watch television. And Mitchum just gives him this weird kind of like flinty-eyed look. And it's like, you know that he's completely bonkers. I love him in this movie.
What's really interesting to me is like Paramount did kind of release a half-assed version of that You'll Love It special edition, which I think just had like a featurette and maybe a trailer.
Yeah, big deal.
Like, because I've seen the Blu-ray recently, but it's not what that special edition was recently that they promised. And I like to compare their treatment of this movie to Paramount's treatment of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, which is another movie where there's a ton of stuff in the vaults that didn't. There's a legendary 3.5 hour cut of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, which John Hughes, before he died, you know, said, "Oh, that footage is probably just withering away in the Paramount vault somewhere." And I'm sure the same thing is
sad.
Yeah, it's just, you know, especially with like Candy being gone, and also, you know, Hughes being gone now, and like, I mean, you watch Scrooge, and I mean, so many of the cast is now deceased that it's kind of unsettling. So, you know, with each passing holiday season, you know, the opportunity to really get people to go on record about their involvement with this film gets less. There's less of a chance of that, and you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, like I mentioned, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, like that's a movie I have to watch every Thanksgiving. It's my favorite Steve Martin performance, my favorite John Candy performance. It is just an essential viewing, and I really lump Scrooge in with that. And it's you know, obviously Planes, Trains is much more appreciated than Scrooge is, and I'm not trying to compare the two, other than to say, like, as far as great holiday movies with huge heart go, these two are neck and neck. And it just, you know, Paramount does not do a good job with their special features. We live in an age now, unfortunately, where special features are becoming a prestige format for things like, you know, the work that Vinegar Syndrome and Arrow Films and Shout Factory and Scream Factory are doing.
It's a boutique thing now, yeah.
Yeah, and there's less of a demand for this. So I think, you know, I would love to see an Arrow Films or a Scream Factory get the rights to this and put together the special features for this movie that it deserves. While, like, you know, it would probably be impossible to get Bill Murray to discuss this, because I know he's not a fan of – I believe he's not a fan of how broad his performance is at times in the film. And I know he didn't he allegedly didn't get along with Donner, but Donner's still around. Let's hear what he has to say about it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get all those special features that were announced for the Abandoned You'll Love It edition happen. I'd love to hear what John Glover has to say about this movie, because his performance is astonishing. He plays the most, you know, like, yeah, he's like, give me what you have on Bryce Cummings in L.A. Scumbag. Like, he plays that definitive, like, douchey career ladder climbing, you know, person so beautifully in this movie. Bobcat Goldthwait, who's a comedian who I think is just, I think he's just great, but I think a lot of people still view him as like, oh, he's the screechy voice guy from the Police Academy films. But he gives such a wonderful human, like, you feel so bad for that guy in this movie, you know. And I'd love to hear his thoughts on the film, you know. Yeah, it's something that I would love to see happen. I don't think will happen. But you know what's interesting to me about Scrooge too is we live in a time where people are making fan art, they're making enamel pins, they're making all sorts of stuff about the coldiest of cult movies, where something like Scrooge can't get arrested in this regard. I bought a Christmas ornament this year from the 1982 horror film Basket Case. That exists?
Like, filling that niche of Basket Case merch.
Yeah, and like, I can't get like an enamel pin of like Bill Murray with the Santa hat, you know, with the sprig of mistletoe on it from the end of the film. Like, I would love that, you know. That would be a great thing to have, but there's no, like, there's not even any, like, you know, a movie is underappreciated when there's not even any like bootleg fan stuff from it floating around there on the internet, especially in a time where like enamel pins and all sorts of stuff, like the work that you see on Instagram by like indie pin artists and like the stuff Middle Beyond is doing, there's nothing for Scrooge, and that's crazy to me. I can't imagine it. Like, they just released a Die Hard Christmas book, which is like a kid's version of Die Hard that you can read, like an illustrated storybook. That's insane to me. I would love to see stuff like that for Scrooge.
Maybe you and I, after we're done this, we need to work on some. We need to put together some ideas.
Yeah, I'm going to be interested to hear what the response you get to this this episode is, because I know it's not just us. A lot of my closest friends are major fans of this film. But it just still seems to me that it's quiet, and it's, you know, maybe that's a better thing, because, you know, sometimes audiences for movies can kind of impact your love of the movie. You know, like I always use the Big Lebowski, movie that I absolutely love, but I'm so sick of what fandom is doing with it that yeah. it's just like, you know, not that they're ruining the film because they couldn't, but it's just like, all right, shut up, you know.
Right.
You know, after a while, it's just like, all right, just slow your roll with this. But there's that isn't anything that Scrooge has to worry about yet. So I don't know. It's a double-edged sword when it comes to that kind of overly enthusiastic fandom, I guess.
Yeah, I think maybe part of the reason that this movie – I know a lot of people that like this movie too. But yeah, I think maybe part of the reason maybe people have a tough time with it is that it is very idiosyncratic. I mean, it's got a lot of jokes that it doesn't bother to explain or and yeah. you have to just kind of roll with it. I mean, like the opening, you know, the opening with the Christmas specials, Bob Goulet's Cajun Christmas.
God, it's amazing. Yeah.
And The Night They Killed, or the Night the Reindeer Died with Lee Majors. Yeah. And then, of course, Father Loves Beaver. Like, you have to kind of have an intimate understanding yeah. of the cheesiness of television. And I,
yeah.
they don't, you mentioned that you'll love it, right? There's something else that I always makes me laugh when I think about it, is that this movie, right, when it talks about their version of Scrooge, and they say, you'll love it. Now, the movie, yeah. the joke is that that's such a cheesy phrase. That's such a right. hackneyed joke. And yet right. the very next year, Chevy Chase in Christmas Vacation, the poster tagline is, you'll love it, yeah. unironically. So, I mean, Scrooge is saying yeah. anyone who uses you'll love it is a hack. And the very yeah. next year, Bill's fellow SNL vet is in a movie where you'll love it is supposed to be a joke. And I just think by that, and Christmas Vacation is a beloved hit. You know, a lot of people love that movie. And
it is. And I don't want to shit on that movie right. either, because I do like things about it. But I mean, if I have to compare the two, like, there's no comparison.
Right.
and I don't understand why Christmas Vacation, which is very episodic and not even the best National Lampoon vacation film.
No.
It's just, yeah, I don't really want to get into the whole thing comparing the two, but you made an amazing, amazing point here, is that how Scrooged is unafraid to just make these jokes and assume the audience is intelligent enough to understand what they're going for and then moving on. And the biggest, and probably the joke that I see in this movie every time I watch it that I can't believe they even got away with, is when when Bill Murray has the vision of the waiter on fire with the baked Alaska
yeah.
and he throws the water at him and he says, I'm sorry, I thought you were Richard Pryor. And that is a joke that every time I watch it, I'm still like, oh my God, I can't believe they made that like freebasing reference. And you
in a
know,
Christmas
like,
movie.
Yeah. And it's just, it's such a fucking, oh, I'm sorry. It's such a random joke that is just so bitter and dark and kind of almost angry in a way, but it still referenced this major thing in the life of an iconic comedy god. And it's just random. It's just a complete throwaway thing. And like, I love that Scrooge does that from time to time throughout the film. And the thing that kind of really captures me is during those Christmas programs that they're showing the IBC holiday lineup, I would watch each and every one of those.
Yeah.
Like they are such a reasonable thing to what networks were doing. A friend of mine, my friend Ben Leach, who is just like a great collector, and like he's a fellow like lover of pop culture, like pop culture weirdness. He and I have been talking for the past year about there was this special in the 1980s, which is Andy Williams and the NBC Kids, like like people from like, you know, and traveling the world and seeing like holiday stuff, and that looks like an IBC show. And he finally tracked this down because it's got like Mindy Cohn from The Facts of Life. I think a few of the Cosby Show kids are in it. And like from what we've been talking about this special, it looks it's like something that IBC would have thrown together, you know. So there's a real knowingness about television in the 80s and what holiday specials were like. And it's kind of, you know, there's a lot of really inside the entertainment industry moments that are peppered throughout this film.
Oh yeah, oh absolutely.
And you know, guys like us are real lovers of that kind of stuff. We obsess about this sort of thing. So to have that, you know, there's kind of an extra depth that Scrooge has that other films don't have, you know, other holiday films. And that is something that I appreciate about it as well. So, yeah, you really touched upon a great point about how, like, they're not, you know, they're going along with these jokes and you're going to be there for the ride or you aren't. Right. And it's unapologetic, and I love that. I love that about Scrooge.
Oh, I love it. When John Glover – I mean, first of all, yeah, you're right. John Glover in this movie is riotous. He's just so funny, sleazy. Yeah. When he does the whole thing about – he's ordering the food, and he's like, the California health plate, no dairy in that, okay? You want to smack him. But the other line that I think is, like, so inside Hollywood, and again, it's like you have to either get it or you don't, is when – he's giving instructions to the crew, and he's like, okay, that's it for lunch, everybody. And he goes, you get 45 minutes for lunch. That includes walking time. Like, you have to know, like, what a weird joke that they have to know, like, oh, okay, of course, this guy is going to monitor the fact that it might take you 5 minutes to get to, like, yeah, this is a very internal movie. I mean, like, we're jumping around a bit, but we can't help it. But, like, when, after Frank Cross meets the three homeless people at the shelter, and it's Ann Ramsey from Goonies and the great Michael J. Pollard. Later on when he goes outside and Michael J. Pollard asks Frank for like a dollar to heat his place. And Frank says, I lost all my money to Liz in there. And Michael J. Pollard goes, oh, okay. So he doesn't give Michael J. Pollard the money. And of course, soon we'll find out that one gesture is the thing that ends up killing Michael J. Pollard's character.
Yeah, because he didn't give him any money. It's like, and that's also just a great throwaway reference to, like, Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor as well. It's fantastic.
I mean, it's like that scene. I must have seen Scrooged a dozen times before I caught that moment is the thing that leads to Michael J. Pollard's death. Because we find out that, of course, he's living in this underground little hovel that he's made for himself, and his heater is busted, and he literally freezes to death. And it's like, and I think a lot of other movies would really underscore that scene and really be like, oh, here's Frank. But it just blows right by, and you have to kind of be paying attention. And for a movie as broad as this is, I mean, you've got Carol Kane, the great Carol Kane, you know, in her sadomasochistic fairy costume that she's playing. For a movie that's as broad as it is, it's remarkably subtle in other moments. And I think that's one of the things I love about it, that it toggles back and forth between those kinds of approaches.
Yeah, it is really interesting that there's just a lot going on here. And I think that really brings to mind how great the film's cast is, too. Like, even, you know, you have even people who weren't very well known at that time, like Wendy Malick, who was primarily known to me for her role on Dream On, the old HBO show at that point. Like, this cast is just perfect all the way through. There's not anyone in this cast who is cast at all. And like, Alfre Woodard, I mean, just talk about a suffering assistant and what a deeply human, role she has. And like, you love her from the start, and you know, you just feel for her, but you still kind of love Frank too, even though he's a complete jerk, you know?
He's magnetic.
It's a real, yes. Yeah, he absolutely is. And that's all Bill Murray. Like, another actor I don't think would have been able to pull that off.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, you mentioned it, Alfre Woodard, John Glover, Carol Kane, David Johansen, Michael J. Pollard, Bobcat Goldthwait, John Forsythe. John Forsythe is not a guy that I ever thought of as someone who was funny, because I knew him from Dynasty, and he's the voice of Charlie on Charlie's Angels, of course. But he's really funny in that one scene.
He's great.
You know, I love that whole interchange, him and Bill Murray, when he comes back with a friend. But he's like, you know, I'm lining up a putt on Wingfoot. 5 minutes later, heart attack later, I'm a worm feast. And then it is the whole bit about, I was a captain of industry, adored by, you know, feared by men,
adored
by women. Adored. Let's be honest, Lou, you paid for the women. Where he threatens Bill Murray by dangling him off the building. It has genuine terror to it. Like, it's shot like an actual horror movie.
Yeah. And that's kind of – maybe that's definitely a reason why, you know, is that you have this darkly menacing stuff, you know, and then compared to, like, basically Frost's breakdown on television, you know, where everything is just like, you know, it's yay Christmas. And it's just great. I mean, there's so many, like, moments in this movie that I absolutely love, like – like, he's accepting the Humanitarian of the Year award, and he's like, I will always cherish this and all of you. And then he leaves it in the back of a cab. You know, it's so great. And, you know, yeah, like Brian Doyle Murray playing his father, giving him the gift of veal.
Yeah.
when he's like neglected child. Yeah, it's great. I feel like we've just turned this into an absolute Valentine, and I've derailed any show notes that you've had at this point, but that's what Scrooge does.
Yeah, that's what Scrooge does. I mean, I do want to mention this movie does feature the four Murray brothers that act. It, as you mentioned, it's got Brian Doyle Murray. John Murray plays Frank's brother, John. This is his biggest role. And then we see Joel Murray in the party scene with Carol Kane. Of course, Joel Murray would go on to be pretty famous on Mad Men. He's kind of carved out a career. And he actually worked with Bobcat Goldthwait on one of his movies. I forget which one. The one where the dad and the daughter go on a road trip and start murdering people. He's in that movie.
Okay. And he was on the sitcom Love and War, which was – I forget, was it Jay Thomas and Susan Day?
I think so, yeah.
Was it? Yeah. Yeah, but he was a regular in that, and he was great. Yeah, so – but obviously, you know, him on Mad Men was probably his most acclaimed role, or the role that, you know, he's most recognized for. But, yeah, great actor, you know.
Yeah.
And, it's – you know, I'm usually not one for nepotism in movies, but damn does it work here. It's just great. And, you know, to have him, that's so realistic. You know, like you feel the Cross Brothers relationship because of that, you know, because it has that real life subtext.
Yeah, they have, of course, a familiarity with one another that you just wouldn't get any other way because they actually are brothers. And they said everyone here is really sort of, again, at the top of their game. I do have to mention, because I always do, anytime I can relate something to MASH, it's got to come back to MASH. This movie does feature Jamie Farr in a cameo scene.
Yeah.
He's in the production of Scrooge that they're doing. He never actually gets a line proper in the movie. We only see him on a monitor with Buddy Hackett at one point, which I think is interesting that they bothered to put him in this movie. But yeah, I don't know. I laugh at this movie. I do. I recall, you know, I quote lines and stuff like that. We like to say that our cat, Frankie, is very much like Carol Kane, because she is kind of sweet and then nasty. She'll get on you, really, because it's like the whole, you know, she's all sweet and then close your eyes. Like, that's our cat. Like, she can turn on you at a moment's notice. We have not really covered this person. We mentioned her, but we have to get it. We're ignoring the elephant in the room, and that is, of course, Karen Allen. I know that you and I are just the hugest fans of Karen Allen. She's wonderful in this movie. I think her Donner photographs her beautifully. Her smile, she is just so adorable. And when in the flashback scenes where she and Frank meet for the first time, it's a great meet. They have a genuine chemistry. I think they're terrific together.
Yeah, and she is just she's angelic throughout this movie, and that's kind of the perfect, you know, she is the woman who sets Cross straight. And Karen Allen is an actress who, has she ever delivered a bad performance? She is just always so deeply human. And in a movie about, you know, the holiday season, Christmas time, is she, you know, she is one who has devoted her life to other people almost to her detriment, you would think, at some point, until you see her in the Christmas Future sequence. And, you know, when she gives that, you know, an old friend once told me, scrape them off, Claire. And then she has those tears rolling down. It's heartbreaking because you realize that she's abandoned everything that she truly believed in for, you know, to kind of take up Frank Cross's ideals. And that's horrible. And you know, like, the Karen Allen's performance in this is just another in a long line of Karen Allen performances where I think, like, obviously it's always going to be Marion Ravenwood and then Starman, and Scrooge is like my third favorite performance by her, because she is just so she's so down to earth and realistic, and you just buy everything that you feel like you know people like her, you know, and there, she's just such a deeply human actress, and everything she does in this movie is great. She can do comedy, but she has a subtleness to her performance that she's able to, like, you know, she's up on screen with Bill Murray. That is not an easy thing for anyone to do, and she's giving as good as she gets.
Yeah, that scene with the Christmas Future where we see that Claire has become You know, she's at the lunch and she's in the makeup with her friends and she's, you know, become a member of the Republican Party. And that she talks about scraping them off. And when you cut to Bill Murray and he has that real quiet, and he just goes, I'm sorry, Claire. Like, he knows that he is a shit. Yeah. And he's kind of okay with that, but he's horrified that he's turned her into one. I thought that is – I'm like, boy, this is – that's great. This is like – you know, that's a really killer moment because it's – it is so heartbreaking. And they really – again, you're not, I don't think – in a movie as silly as – again, as broad as this is, I mean, there's a scene where the network sensor gets hit by the rolling barrel. I mean, it's got some practical pratfall-y stuff. That's a real gut punch of a moment.
Yeah. And those tonal shifts are one of the things that I love about that. But the Claire Frank relationship is just fantastic, and I love watching Karen Allen's face in that end sequence where Frank Cross is delivering his breakdown slash redemption speech, because she's doing so much. Whenever the camera cuts to her, you just see this kind of hopeful appreciation and just happiness. And a lot of that stuff she's doing, like, she doesn't have much to do in that scene at all line-wise, but, you know, everything is on her face once Frank brings her out in front of the cameras, and it's so real. And it feels like next time you watch that movie, really pay close attention to her when she's – what she's up to in that sequence, because, man, is she just emoting the hell out of her acting abilities there. And it is just an incredible, incredible performance and a real understated performance. But that's kind of what Karen Allen does, and I think she's one of those actresses who everyone's like, oh, she's great, but no one really gives her the attention that she's due. And she's fantastic. And I mean, even Crystal Skull, which just shit all over, you know, her character of Marion Ravenwood. I mean, she's still great in it. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, I know she doesn't – she's kind of more into, like, teaching acting kind of technique these days, I think, than actually being in front of a camera. But every time she does or is, she's always very welcome presence.
Yeah.
And I know we've talked about her in the past on these shows. Yeah.
Yeah, I like to say that Crystal Skull was worth it just to have Marion Ravenwood again, even though that is a terrible movie. I'm still happy that it exists because I just, you know, it was kind of an acknowledgement that, yeah, Marion Ravenwood was the best one. And we give Karen Allen a...
Yeah, and there's that one scene that I actually love in the film is when, you know, Indy's about to climb out and do whatever garbage he does in that film, but he's just like says to her, yeah, the problem with the other women was they weren't you. And that was just, that I think was just such a perfect moment in that film.
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of hope that, you know, they're threatening another indie film. I kind of hope if they do, they bring Karen Allen along and kind of redeem her character, who was weirdly passive in Crystal Skull, where, you know, she'd be kicking ass alongside Indy, you know.
Yeah,
But yeah, I kind of hope they redeem that if they do make this next film. But that's a whole other.
That's a whole other. Yeah, the whole other show. But yeah, you're right about that. She
it's
is
a kettle, I mean, of fish there.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the reacting. I mean, I think it was Spencer Tracy who said most of acting is reacting. And yeah, I mean, she's the one having to kind of absorb Frank's diatribes. You know, he's yelling a lot in this movie. Bill Murray does a lot of yelling, and, you know, it's probably a little hard to sit there and take that in and sort of not just get bowled over by his energy, by his magnetism, by his charisma, by his dark energy in this movie. I mean, he's a very dark figure, but she sort of takes it in. I mean, she looks great. I mean, her smile is beautiful. The scene of them in their apartment, I totally buy. They seem like an actual real couple. I love her in the tub.
Oh, absolutely.
Her in the tub smoking the joint with the little pincers, you know. And they talk about the Ginsu knives and then the whole thing about the Kama Sutra. And he's like, did this. And she's like, with who? And he's like, buddy mine did this. They seem like a real couple. That seems – they feel very lived in. When you think about how little time actors that have to play the people that are in love – probably get to spend together. That's you know, that's pretty good stuff.
Yeah, and they've incredible chemistry too, I think.
Yeah, I
buy everything about them as a couple from the second you see them together. Yeah.
Yeah, she's wonderful. Again, we're bouncing around here, but I can't help it. Now, have you ever noticed there's one scene when they cut back to the production? There's a guy who walks from the back of the frame to the front, and he's yelling and he's yelling at nobody in particular, and he's yelling about, I don't get what I want, I get what I want, and he just walks, and it's never referred to, everyone's ignoring him. I've always wondered, is that, like, Richard Donner's joke about, like, is that the director? Like, who is that guy? I've never been able to figure out who that guy is.
I've always felt that, like, the actual production scenes are, because I know there was a lot of stuff cut from this, and I feel like all the production scenes from that were there. So that's why that seems a little choppy to me. And I just kind of felt that like that was a victim of something being cut. And the greatest example of this is how on the, I forget if it's Operation Reach Out or Operation Outreach is the official name of where Claire works on the outside of it, but the business card has it wrong when they do that weird insert shot of someone's hand, who I don't even think is Bill Murray's hand, and he has the card that I think is Operation Reach Out. I forget if it's Reach Out or Outreach, but you know, they have it wrong from what the actual building is called.
Oh, geez.
And I think like that's an actual, you know, that's more than just a film club. It's to cover up something that was done with the editing of the film to cut like certain sequences out or to make it lighter, or I don't know if there were reshoots on this, but I know there was some editing weirdness. And I think that scene that you reference is there too, is kind of indicative of that. And I also think that's why we don't see Jamie Farr actually say anything, you know, it's kind of that thing.
Yeah. It never made any sense to me that, I mean, not that Jamie Farr was like a name, but I mean, it was somewhat,
of fame for the audience that movie was geared to as Buddy Hackett, you know.
I mean, Buddy Hackett gets actual lines. We actually hear him, right, you know, with the whole sea urchins thing.
Yeah. And I love that one thing my friends and I always talk about that's just a fantastic little touch is how John Glover just calls him. He's like, oh, okay, buddy. Like, you know, buddy as in buddy friend, and also as his actual name. And it's just a wonderful little character moment for Bryce Cummings there. Yeah.
Oh, I love that bit with Bill Murray where he's like, oh, you want to call? You want to call lunch, Frank? All right. And he just turns the bullhorn. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah.
He's so condescending to Frank.
We need to have a talk, Bryce. Yeah, it's perfect.
He was always good in those roles. John Glover was great at those sort of sleazy guys kind of thing.
And I mean, he's Daniel Clamp in Gremlins 2 is kind of a more lovable version of Bryce Cummings, but the performance is more or less the same.
Oh, I forgot. That's right. I forgot that he's in Gremlins 2. You're right. Oh, geez. I forgot all
And
that.
It's more or less the same performance.
Yeah, you're right.
Daniel Clamp is less malicious, I think, and more clueless than Bryce Cummings is. And also, I mean, being Chris Cummins and forever throughout my life having it misspelled as Cummings, I really appreciate that about the Bryce Cummings character. adding that G into my last name.
Yeah, it's you talk about the ad-libs. I mean, yeah, from what I heard, that Bill Murray did ad-lib a lot of this movie, and it does feel that way. I mean, again,
especially the Feed Me Seymour, you know, the sequence. Yeah, that's absolutely all Bill Murray ad-lib. And I feel like a lot of his closing speeches, too.
Well, let's talk about that, because that's the big that's the thing that a lot of people have a problem with. But I love it. I love that the ending is so loose and rambly, and because it feels real. It feels like this is Frank Cross coming to this realization in real time. It's not scripted. It's not a guy. This is really him. I mean, first of all, I don't want to miss, because I'm playing the movie as we're talking here. I'm playing in the background.
Okay.
There is one scene I do want to mention before we get just to that moment, because it leads to this. So first of all, we talked about earlier where he says, you know, I'm sorry, Claire. I love when he's in the elevator with the Ghost of Christmas Future, and he just says quietly, that was a lousy thing to do. I love how quiet Murray is in that moment. And then that leads right next to the very next scene of we see the very future of Frank Cross getting burned alive in his coffin.
Yeah.
And we see, you know, Wendy Malick and Joel Murray as older. We get a cameo from Michael O'Donoghue as the priest, which is, you know, that's a great piece of casting. But that scene, I have to tell you, and maybe we don't want to get too far afield, but like, when I die, I intend to be cremated. I don't want to be buried.
As do I. Yeah.
Right. I feel like that is the most, you know, sort of environmentally conscious thing to do. I have to say, now, and I fully believe that that my body, as such as it is just a vessel for the other thing. You know, I don't really have a great connection to the body. I don't believe for one moment that when I die that I'm even going to know that I've been cremated, because this thing is just this other thing. But I have to say, that scene of watching Bill Murray in the coffin with his feet on fire gives me just a little bit of pause about getting cremated.
It's horrifying. Yeah, yeah. It's a... I made the joke. You can. I'm gonna get a little tiny bit political here. So feel free to yank this out if this goes against your own views or whatever. But when I saw the picture earlier this week that we're recording this, they had pictures of the Trump White House decorated for Christmas, and the thing that instantly came to my mind was the Ghost of Christmas Future sequences of Scrooged.
Yeah.
So I just want to throw that out there, and you can do whatever you wish
now,
with that.
Now it looks just like a dark gray.
And I couldn't, and I put a picture of future Claire on Twitter with that. Yeah, just like, this is what, you know, what my face was like when I saw the Trump White House at Christmas. But yeah, I that was like the weirdest correlation I've made with Scrooge in my daily life of late.
you can't help it. I mean, that said, I love this movie. Takes you to the darkest place imaginable, where we're literally seeing Bill Murray on fire, which again is a great effect. I mean, it's all one shot where we see his feet on fire and the camera pans up and it's Bill Murray. And I'm like, I wonder how they did that, because it looked, I mean, there's no way that they literally set Bill's feet on fire,
right?
But it's whatever the hidden effect is, it's really well hidden, because I can't tell.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah, the way they did it. I mean, I imagine they do it the way they do the Sawing Magicians in Half, where it's like his body slopes down, but the legs are seamlessly attached. Yeah, so
So then that leads right to the big moment. We get the Hallelujah music, and it's the whole bit where Frank goes on his speech. And I don't know, I love the speech. I love, there's one point where Bill Murray, Frank Cross goes like, like he can't even remember the line. And it's real. It's genuine. It's like you're like watching this guy have this moment, and you're not used to seeing things like that in a big screen movie.
I would love to know like how much he had memorized, or if he just had rough outlines and he went, because my favorite delivery in that speech is moment where he's like, you can give someone a sandwich and you can say, oh, by the way, here. Like, and the way, like, I love the way he delivers that, like, the whole speech is fantastic. And I remember like seeing it, you know, I guess I was like 12 or 13 at the time. The time I saw it first, I'm like, this is really an interesting way to end a movie, because everyone knows the way Christmas Carol ends.
Yeah.
So you know he's going to be redeemed. So to subvert that and do it in a different way, and to use television as the medium of which he does it in a feature film, I think was really interesting too. Like that, you know, he is speaking to you, the audience. So there's that. Staying in the universe of how the movie works, but still breaking the fourth wall. I thought it was a very interesting way to deliver this technically. And also just subvert the whole, you know, he catches the coin that the redeemed Ebenezer Scrooge throws down, you know, to get the Christmas turkey. And that kicks off this whole thing, because you know how Christmas Carol ends. Everyone knows it.
Right.
Everyone knows going into Scrooge, he's going to be redeemed. But it's, you know, to have that information in front of you and to still do it in a surprising way, I think was a very, very tricky thing for the screenwriters, for Richard Donner, and for Bill Murray to pull off. And I think it was executed perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, there are not a lot of actors that you could just say, okay, you're going to ramble for 11 minutes and that's the end of our movie. I mean, boy, you know.
Yeah. And like, it's captivating. Like, you feel like you're watching. Watching this character, basically, like, I always call it the nervous breakdown scene, because that's what it feels like to me, is like he's having a nervous breakdown, but at the same time he's becoming his best self. And it's a fascinating thing to watch. And man, would I love to see something like that happen on a real TV show.
Yeah,
it would be amazing to watch. But yeah, it's so real. Such a real performance that you believe it. You believe that Frank Cross was this asshole who understands the way he's been is wrong. Yeah. And that's what they deliver, and they deliver it beautifully.
I love how this movie, you know, dovetails in terms of that it brings all the characters that we've seen throughout the movie in various strands together. I mean, you've got the reactions of everybody watching. You've got Robert Mitchum yelling at the TV, where Bill Murray says, what are you people doing watching television on Christmas Eve? And he's like, they're paying your salary, you ass. He screams that. I love that we see the brothers watching the party, watching Murray, and they cut back to the party. And he says, hey, the answer to your question was the SS Minnow. No points this round. And they're like, how did he know about that? I want to see that scene where he has to explain how he knew that, the Griffith movie. And then, of course, Karen Allen, you know, gets called down to the station and she calls a cab and it's David Johansen. You know, yeah. Can you get me to the NBC or whatever, the XBC building, in 10 minutes? And he's like, what floor? I love that everybody we've seen throughout this movie comes together in this. I love movies that do that, that get all the characters we've seen for the last 90 minutes and put them all in one spot. I love that kind of thing.
It's a really, really great ending. And you know, I know some criticisms that I heard about the film is just like, oh, he just delivers a script and that wraps things up. And I think, you know, when people say that as a criticism, they kind of miss the point. Like, you know, and again, it kind of goes into what I was saying earlier, is you know how this story ends. It's one of the most told stories ever.
Yeah.
So, you know, the way that it's handled is magnificently, and it's true to the characters, it's true to the way the movie's been established, and it's delivered perfectly by Bill Murray, and it's fun, and it's funny. And it's more than a little touching too, which is the point. I mean, you know, it does get a little bit schmaltzy, but at that point, it's fine. I'm totally down with it.
Yeah, when little Calvin finally speaks and he says, "God bless us, everyone," and the way that Alfre Woodard does like this sort of clap, she's just so happy.
Oh, yeah.
It's very schmaltzy, but it does earn it. And that's when Karen Allen shows up. I love the whole thing where he grabs her and he's like, the whole world, Claire, the whole world. He turns that.
It's great.
You know, like, that's fantastic. And I love the fact that they give the final line of the movie, of the sort of real movie, to John Murray, of like one of the, because he's the one who says, "My brother, the King of Christmas," and that's what cuts it. Like, what a great way to just end the movie, not on Bill Murray, even. Although, of course, he does get the final line, but the movie itself it has this just wonderfully improvised feel to it, and I don't know. To me, I'm all in. You know, I watch this movie absolutely. Ending, and I'm like, I'm here, man. I'm on board.
Now, I have to ask you, since you saw this in the theater, and it's something I've always wondered about. But again, this is a movie that never has revival screenings. There's no like Fathom Films, Christmas screening of this. There's no Rep Film. There's no Alamo Drafthouse showing this.
Nope.
And again, it's like, what the hell is wrong with you people? But okay, so if you remember, and did the audience like sing along in the theater when you saw it during the end credits, or did everyone just up and leave?
No. People were into it. People were into it. And then when he comes out and he does the whole thing about, the real men. Yeah, but how about you women? How about you talking through the whole movie? People were laughing. No. People loved
it. Okay, good.
And then when he comes back out and he says, "Feed me, Seymour. Feed Bill," which is, you know, a little reference. No, people loved it. It was people had a good time. It was great. And it ends with, I love the song, the Al Green and Annie Lennox song. Like, that's a great cover of that song. Like, it's just the dang thing. I love Robert Mitchum dancing with his wife. Like, I watched this whole thing. Like, this whole thing just works. You're right. I mean, it's funny. Like, Cinemark does these. You know, they do these classic series films where they run old movies all year long. And in December, they run Christmas movies. They've never run Scrooged.
It gets no attention whatsoever. It's just, it is, you know, like, I can't understand it. And, like, you would think, like, you know, like, Philly has, like, midnight movie screenings, and they do, like, some Christmas screenings. Mm-hmm. I think they're doing A Christmas Story.
Yeah.
And I have no issue with A Christmas Story whatsoever, you know. But like, really, you're gonna show that as a midnight Christmas movie? Like, you know, if anything, like show Bob Clark's other Christmas movie, Black Christmas. Like, that makes a lot more sense to me, because that is a horror cult film. But like, you're gonna show A Christmas Story as a midnight movie, where that's something that is shown 24 hours a day at the holiday season. They're doing a live musical of it this year. Like, show Scrooge.
Yeah.
Give Scrooge a chance.
Scrooge,
you know, because
great,
I think this
Christmas
is a movie that people just
midnight.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I know TNT a few years ago used to show it every time around Christmas. And I think that kind of has gone away. I mean, this is a movie. Look, I'm not making it like this movie's like Howard the Duck, where people hate it. But it just doesn't, for a Christmas movie with Bill Murray, given how universally beloved Bill Murray is, the fact that this movie isn't more appreciated and isn't more of a part of the cultural conversation about holiday films is insane to me, and I don't understand that.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, if there were, you know, like, there's Fathom events I tend to stay away from, but if they did a holiday viewing of Scrooge where they had, like, a 10-minute interview with Richard Donner or, wow, Bill Murray beforehand, I would absolutely shell out and go see it.
Oh, that would be amazing. That would be absolutely amazing.
But, yeah, it's just it's crazy to me that there's nothing like this. It's just a movie that's kind of there, and you know, people are just like about, and I'll never understand that. Whereas you know, whereas a movie like National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, which I enjoy too, but I mean, that's a movie that is just a phenomenon, and it's really such a lesser film than Scrooge is. And, you know, given the fact that they were released a year apart and they both feature very high prominent Saturday Night Live people, it's weird to me that, you know, Scrooge isn't more popular than it is. And I'll never kind of understand that. And maybe that's great because, you know, folks like you and I and the people that we know in our lives who love this movie as much as we do, will just, it just makes us appreciate it all the more. But it's still confusing to me. Like, I don't understand what it is that people just dismiss about this movie.
The one little piece of, like, I can't even think of the word, but like the one thing I hang on to that this movie, you know, did leave some lasting impression is that, of course, Netflix a couple of years ago did a Very Merry Christmas special,
yeah,
which I really like. Yeah. I really love that thing.
I love it. Yeah.
And David Johansen is in it. And so I feel like, yes. Okay, yeah. There's a little bit of a, you know, Bill Murray equals Christmas kind of thing. There's no reference in that to Scrooge, but I always feel like there's some level of, right. this is a kind of thing made by people that love Scrooge, because why else would you put Bill, I mean, Paul Schaefer's in it, and he's has a cameo in Scrooge. There is some, you know,
exactly, yeah,
relation there to these two.
It's projects. An acknowledgement, I felt.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. That was the word I was looking for.
Yeah, it's an absolute acknowledgement. Yeah. And you know, and if anyone listening to this hasn't seen that Bill Murray Christmas special, it's perfect viewing for, like, you know, Christmas is a not great time for a lot of people, but, you know, if you're having a day where you're just feeling overwhelmed by things, just get yourself a drink and throw that little special on, and it'll just make you smile. Yeah. It's a nice little distraction from kind of the unpleasant aspects of the holiday season, which I think the same could be said for Scrooge.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I someday I want to do a whole show on that special because I love that thing. It's one of my favorite things Bill Murray's ever done.
Right, my hand is up volunteering if you ever do.
Cool. All right.
I'm a fan of that as well. I mean, I feel enough like we share the similar aesthetics for things we like here. I'd be on board for that as well.
Plans for next year.
It's a hell of a
then.
Fun show. We'll do that for 2018 Christmas.
Perfect. So, well, I think that is going to do it for Scrooged. I have to say, Chris, at the beginning of the show, I was wondering whether you were going to earn a VCR or a towel for your appearance on this one, but I'm going to go with VCR. I think you earned it.
We don't want to scare the Dickens out of people.
Dickens! Nobody gets me.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Most of these are towels, but you two earn a VHS. Top of the line
VCR. So anyway, yeah, it's Scrooge. It's great. Chris and I love it. So Chris, where can people find you on the internet? Tell us about where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter at Bionic Bigfoot and at Sci-Fi Explosion. And you can, if you're in the Philadelphia area, you can check me out the first Wednesday of every month at Frankfurt Hall, co-hosting Nerd Night Philadelphia. The last Wednesday of every month at Philomoco, hosting Music Video Book Club. And several times throughout the year in Philly and New York City, and maybe coming to a city near you with Sci-Fi Explosion. So the best place to keep up on everything I'm up to is there. And every Wednesday, I review the fantastic television show Riverdale for DemGeek.com. So check that out.
Very cool. I got to go to one of those things. I really do. I got to get off my butt and get outside. I don't like to go outside in the winter, but
going outside is vastly overrated, but I do recommend going outside for one of my events because I try to make it a good time for all.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. So excellent. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. This is a long overdue pleasure.
Yeah, yeah. We got to between now and next year when we do Very Merry Christmas, we'll do another Karen Allen movie. We'll at least do that.
Okay. Yeah, Starman. I would. Let's do Starman.
We already did Starman.
Oh, we did.
Yeah.
So what's the Starman? Was the first one we did? Wasn't it?
Yeah. We did two movies. We did. Yeah. So we got to find another Karen. There's some other Karen Allen movies we could do. So.
Edit that out. I don't want to sound like a dope.
No, I'm leaving that in. You talked about your memory is bad, so there you go.
Oh, it's terrible. So. Yeah, I wasn't sure if I did Starman in here or The Projection Booth, which is the other podcast that I tend to do a lot.
That's a very good show, so cool. All right. Well, yeah, we did do Starman. So, of course, you can find back episodes of this show over on our network site, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com, and we're always talking about movies and stuff on Twitter at filmandwaterpod. So thanks, everybody, for listening, and until next week, that's a wrap.
Bitch hit me with a toaster.
Oh, I love a girl with spirit.
Right. Well, this is nice. Where are we, Trump Tower?